Sometimes it feels like the world is moving at hyperspeed and you can't keep up because it's one thing, then another, and don't forget the meeting and the yoga class and the dinner reservation, but then you get into the all-new Nissan Murano, and you feel the breeze from the panoramic moonroof, while the massaging seats melt away the tension of the day. And you realize that sometimes the greatest rush is not rushing at all. Shop the all-new Murano at NissanUSA.com. Panoramic moonroof, massaging leather appointed seats are available features.
Hi, I'm Kristen Bell. Carvana makes car buying easy. Isn't that right, hun? Dax? Dax?
Sorry, did you know about this 7-day money back guarantee?
A week to evaluate seat comfiness, you say?
A week of terrain tests? Yeah, I can test the brake pad resistance at variable speeds.
Make sure all the kids' stuff fits nicely.
Make sure our stuff fits nicely.
Oh, the...
Right. Still need to buy the car. Getting ahead of ourselves here.
Buy your car with Carvana today.
Ear Cult.
Content warning. Take care while listening to this podcast. It discusses criminal activity, including substance use, violence, and murder. Interviews conducted for this podcast do not reflect the views of the host, of Ear Cult LLC, or its partners. Listener discretion is advised. Three things cannot be long hidden: the sun, the moon, and the truth. Buddha. It is better that 10 guilty persons escape than that one innocent suffer. Sir William Blackstone. Why is he in prison? My son, 6 years old. Wednesday, November 5th, 1986. Port Huron, Michigan. A cold, unremarkable morning. 20-year-old Scott Macklem drove to class at St. Clair County Community College, known locally as SC4. He never made it home. Scott was murdered in the campus parking lot by an unknown gunman, leaving this quiet port town on the Canadian border shaken and desperate for answers. The police quickly zeroed in on one man, Fred Freeman, now known as Temujin Kinsu. But there were glaring issues. Temujin had alibis placing him over 400 miles away at the moment the murder occurred. The trial that followed was rife with controversy, marked by shaky evidence, questionable testimony, and a conviction so unbelievable it raised more questions than answers. Now, we're taking you inside a real-time investigation of this story, featuring new revelations from witnesses, expert insights from those who've studied the case, and a meticulous re-examination of the trial, the evidence, and the events that brought us here. I'm the last person you would expect to do this. I've spent most of my podcasting career telling stories of how law enforcement and the justice system got it right. But in this case, I believe they got it wrong. Now, I'm here, and the goal is simple. Uncover the truth and seek justice, not just for Temujin Kinsu, but also for Scott Macklem. Two life sentences, one search for the truth. I'm Jason Ussery, and this is Inconceivable, the story of Temujin Kinsu. Preface. Invictus. Out of the night that covers me, black is the pit from pole to pole. I thank whatever gods may be for my unconquerable soul. In the fell clutch of circumstance, I have not winced nor cried aloud. Under the bludgeonings of chance, my head is bloody but unbowed. Beyond this place of wrath and tears, looms but the horror of the shade. And yet the menace of the years finds and shall find me unafraid. It matters not how strait the gate, how charged with punishments the scroll. I am the master of my fate. I am the captain of my soul. In 1875, the English poet William Ernest Henley sat down and wrote those words. At the time, the work was untitled, but when placed into his first published volume of poems, it was given the name Invictus. The meaning of Invictus translates to invincible, undefeated, or unconquered. The poem itself is a reminder that through immense despair, darkness, and hopelessness, one can find hope, resilience, and strength through sheer force of will and an interminable spirit. This story, and many of its players, embody all of that and more. Darkness, chance, pain, desperation, courage, strength, and hope. These are the consequences of the decisions we all make, and we have all probably felt each of them. If you get them in the right order, at the right time, and in the right place, you usually come out okay. But if even one of those variables shift, your life, or someone else's, could change forever. Just ask Temujin Kinsu. He'll tell you. My name is Jason Usry. I'm a podcast creator, producer, and editor. I'm a produced screenwriter, award-winning broadcast media veteran, and a growing skeptic in just about everything. I first heard the story of the murder of Scott Macklem and the conviction and incarceration of Fred Freeman, now known as Temujin Kinsu, about 4 years ago on a podcast called The Prosecutors.
That's a huge problem. Where Temujin has all these alibi witnesses putting him 9 hours away.
As the name suggests, two hosts, Alice and Brett, have a career prosecuting cases in my birth state of Alabama. Roll Tide. But this case was the first one I heard them cover where they openly claimed that the wrong person was convicted of the crime. While we will get into the details of those claims later, the story itself was shocking to me. For what it's worth to you, I'm no justice warrior. I think most people who go to prison earned their way there and should serve their sentence in accordance with the law. But hearing their presentation of the case was very confronting to my belief in the system. A few years earlier, my faith in the system was shaken when I produced my first podcast ever, End of Watch with Bootsy and Sal.
Guys trying to get the bad guys, and when the bad guys try to get away, it can get ugly quick. But if you're not trained for that situation or don't have experience in that situation, watching those videos can be pretty, even if you are watching those videos can be pretty brutal. Because
that show featured a former homicide detective and retired ATF undercover agent who chopped it up with other members of law enforcement, first responders, and mental health professionals. Both of their careers ended unceremoniously, and they, in very stark, vulnerable language, were happy to share their stories in an effort to take away the stigma of mental health support they felt was needed in the law enforcement community. I respect that. But they also shared stories about how the system they laid their lives down for every day had in the end betrayed them at the behest of jockeying politicians or the media's thirst for the next big headline. That, like all projects, came to an end. But I enjoy the challenge of telling stories through audio. I love assisting in stories through experts that might inform, entertain, and educate. I was hired by the Prosecutor's Podcast, the same show that I originally heard this case on. I also work for LA Not So Confidential, hosted by two snarky forensic psychologists based on the West Coast. Their show educates me and the audience on psychological research behind crime.
Hi, I'm Dr. Shiloh.
And I'm Dr. Scott.
And this is LA Not So Confidential, the forensic psychology and true crime podcast.
In each episode, we explore the intersection of psychology, the criminal justice...
The most recent show I joined as editor in this genre is The Consult, Real FBI Profilers, where four retired FBI profilers from the famed Behavioral Analysis Unit take you inside their thought processes and reveal how they work out behavior to assist law enforcement, from victimology to crime scene analysis and more.
Welcome to The Consult. I'm Julia Cowley, retired FBI agent and profiler, and I'm joined by my colleagues,
Angela Surser,
Susan Kostler-Drew,
and Bob Drew.
Each of these shows have given me a sliver of experience in the varying disciplines, and I will utilize the things I have learned to analyze this case and everything surrounding it. I hope you will join me on the journey. So, how did I get here? A couple of years ago, I got a message from Paula Kensu, Timogen's wife. I'll get into their relationship in a later episode, but she reached out to me for a completely different reason than for me to join the Free Timogen fight. She had become a fan of my true crime satire show, Santa May Be a Criminal, and she wanted to share it with him. I agreed to send her a script for him to read. I also told her that I believed in his innocence. I received a very kind thank you note from her husband, Timogen Kensu, also known as Prisoner Number 189355 of the Michigan Department of Corrections. At the time, I wasn't led to act. Sometimes, though, a story gnaws at your soul. It echoes, ticks away moments in your mind, pokes and prods at your heart until you can't take it anymore, and you just have to do something. So, around March of 2024, I began to really give the murder of Scott Macklem and the subsequent conviction of the man we know as Timogen Kensu some real thought. I'd listened to almost all of the podcast, watched almost all the news footage and documentaries.
The more alibi witnesses that came forward, the harder they were on me. When it came time for the polygraph and they wouldn't give it to me, that was when I began to say to myself, this is it, they're going to set me up.
And I'd read almost all the articles available about the case. And still, I had a big question. What on earth is he still doing there? Is there something more? Could he have committed this crime? Or is this a case where the justice system, in which I have firmly believed for most of my life, simply got it and continues to get it wrong? I'll also state this up front. I had no desire to become an investigative journalist in this process. I have always looked at this podcast as telling a story. As a matter of fact, I've written 20 drafts of this very preface in the evolution of this show. I came into this fully biased towards Timogen's innocence. That might turn off some people immediately, but before you move on to the next true crime book or podcast on your playlist, I want you to consider something. I started with a blank slate before and arrived here, believing the wrong man is in prison for Scott Macklem's murder. At this juncture, I am still there, but that bias has forced me to take hard accounts of the way that I tell this story. It has forced me to question every single thing. I have to. You deserve it, Timogen deserves it, and Scott deserves it. My promise is to give my honest, authentic account of what it's like to cover this journey and my fact-supported belief in the case. My goal is to tell the story in a different way, not just a recounting of the crime, trial transcripts, or supplemental reports. It's to investigate the very grounds that Scott was murdered on, the prison in which Timogen sits, and the area where they all lived. My hope is to examine who Fred Freeman was, who Timogen Kensu is, and everything that has happened over the almost four decades he's been in prison. Now, with my transparency laid bare, up next, we'll outline November 5th, 1986, the day that gave two men life sentences, destroyed two families, and set this entire podcast into motion.
Hi, I'm Kristen Bell. Carvana makes car buying easy. Isn't that right, hun? Dax? Dax?
Sorry, did you know about this 7-day money-back guarantee?
A week to evaluate seat comfiness, you say?
A week of terrain tests? Yeah, I can test the brake pad resistance at variable speeds.
Make sure all the kids' stuff fits nicely.
Make sure our stuff fits nicely.
Oh, the...
Right. Still need to buy the car. Getting ahead of ourselves here.
Buy your car with Carvana today.
Wednesday, November 5th, 1986, almost a week shy of my 6th birthday. Just 9 months prior, I, like many others, watched the Space Shuttle Challenger explode on live television. To me, the years that followed seemed like the golden age of television news media. We trusted the people who joined us in our homes every night at 6 p.m., we witnessed the birth of 24-hour true crime with a low-speed police chase in Los Angeles with a white Bronco. Then saw our entire world change on September the 11th. Apparently, a plane has just crashed into the world. As the world evolved, so did the way we accessed information.
Responding to reports of a shooting, we're told, at Newton Elementary School this morning.
And finally, on podcasts. In 1986, I didn't know that I'd be sitting in front of this microphone today. I didn't know how much of my life would be surrounded by case files and evidence photos. I didn't know I'd walk into a prison to interview the subject of this podcast, or the pressure the story would bring. But how could I? Because on November 5th, 1986, I was just 5 years old. I don't remember that morning, but I'm sure my father left for work and my mother made my 2-year-old sister and I breakfast. At the same time, nearly 1,000 miles away, 20-year-old Scott Macklem rose from his bed and prepared for classes at St. Clair County Community College, also known as SC4. Maybe he had coffee, maybe he didn't. The truth of the matter is, we know very little about Scott, but he is a big focus of our story. I promised to work to find out who he really was. A son, a brother, and, reportedly, a soon-to-be husband and father. But what we know at this point, after he arrived at SC4, as he stood next to his car, a gunman approached, either by car or by foot, raised a 12-gauge shotgun, pulled the trigger, and ended Scott's life. We will go through the murder in more detail in further episodes, but for the purposes of our setup, all you need to know is that Scott was murdered at around 8:55 a.m. in broad daylight in the St. Clair County Community College parking lot in Port Huron, Michigan. As Scott lay dying on the cold ground, potential witnesses passed him by, some thinking he was working on his car, others thinking he was playing some kind of a prank. No one saw the murder take place. A few reported hearing the sound of what they described as a firecracker or car backfiring. Some say they heard a scream, but it didn't sound serious. It sounded like a joke. It wasn't. Within minutes, police arrived on scene. The investigation that ensued and the trial after had been scrutinized by scores of legal and subject matter experts. It has been contested in federal court and has sparked a movement from thousands of true crime consumers. But the truth is, what happened that day and the subsequent months and years left us with many questions and very few answers. At the moment Scott's murder took place, 23-year-old Frederick Thomas Freeman, the man who in just 8 days would be taken into custody for Scott's murder, lay in bed with his 18-year-old pregnant girlfriend, Michelle Woodworth, in Rock, Michigan. Rock, a town of just a couple of hundred people, rests in the Upper Peninsula, approximately 440 miles north of SC4. In the UP, or up north as it's known by Michiganders, it was even more cold. And Fred knew that, because just hours before, he'd been on a date with another woman and hanging out with friends in nearby Escanaba. That's a town on the shores of Lake Michigan, about 28 miles southwest of Rock. These moments prove important for us later. Fred was a troublemaker, a ladies' man, and by all accounts, a hell of a good time. Today, he doesn't dispute any of those characterizations, but I believe all of them played into what happened in the following days of his life and the trial that would come 6 months later. On November 14th, 1986, which was ironically my 6th birthday, Fred was arrested, booked, and on May 19th, 1987, he was convicted in a St. Clair County courtroom for the murder of Scott Macklem, a man he claims he never met.
So I'm in my car, my rental here, driving to 26 Mile Road to interview Timogen Kinsey.
What have I gotten myself into? I'm driving toward Macomb Correctional Facility on a snowy morning in mid-January.
About 21 degrees, probably feels like more like 15 or 12 or something like that. Pretty bitterly cold.
I'm from the south, so this is the most snow I've ever seen. It's everywhere. The landscape is sparse and industrial. Before I go on the journey, I get encouragement from people that know I'm doing this. I'm sure they sense my anxiety. My mind is racing. In an hour, I'll be sitting across from Timogen Kinsey, the man convicted of Scott Macklem's murder.
And just trying to document some things while I'm driving down this. You know, the landscape here is sort of flat.
I don't know what to expect from this experience. It's something I've never done before. Is something I never thought I'd do. But here I am.
Going to Macomb.
In 2 miles, take exit 248 onto 26 Mile Road.
And, the prison is on 26 Mile Road. I'm 2 miles from that now. Passing the Richmond, New Haven. Exit here, that's 247. And we've got 26 Mile Road in Marine City, exit 248, which is the exit I'm going to take. My time with him is at noon, so it's 11:33 at the moment.
I'm not allowed to take in a recorder, but we have a workaround for that that I'll explain later.
I don't know, it should be just about 2 hours.
For now, I have a journal and a couple of pens.
So, I will report back once I get my interview is from noon to 2. Today
is the
right
lane to take exit 248 onto 26 Mile Road.
Today is January 16th, 2025. So, he has a few media interviews today. But yeah, we're gonna
take the exit.
Do what we can. I'm taking the exit now to...
I take the exit onto 26 Mile Road toward the prison, and in the starkly cruel way much of this case has worked, I pass the Oak Ridge Golf Club. Only about 15 seconds before I see the blue sign of Macomb Correctional Facility. I make the right-hand turn and pass all the signs stating restrictions. No firearms, alcohol, drugs, tobacco, etc. I navigate the large curve, seeing a water tower in the distance, and then the facility, made up of several buildings. It doesn't look exactly like I thought. The buildings I can see are brick, not the gray stone and concrete I expected. But still, the austerity of it is striking. As I park, I ask myself again, what have I gotten myself into? I leave my phone and wallet in the car, taking in my notepad, pens, and identification. I think about those words that Henley wrote, particularly the first and last couple of verses. Out of the night that covers me, black as the pit from pole to pole. I am the master of my fate. I am the captain of my soul. I walk into the prison and get ready to interview the man convicted of Scott Macklem's murder almost 40 years ago. I take a deep breath and get ready to finally meet Temujin Kinsu. Inconceivable, the story of Temujin Kinsu is written, researched, produced, and edited by Ear Cult LLC. That's me, Jason Usry. Carly Fulham is my co-producer and partner in all important things. Special thanks to both Paula and Temujin Kinsu, along with many others, for providing case materials for this podcast. Thanks to Joy Marie Mann for additional recordings. Check out her book, My Friend Temujin, Serving Life, Changing Lives, at neweraincj.org. Join the Inconceivable Facebook group or show your support on patreon.com/santamaybe, where all Ear Cult content is currently available. Music and atmospheres are licensed royalty-free through Epidemic Sound, Universal Music for Creators, Soundstripe, Pond 5, and others. All examinations and opinions in this podcast are solely those of our contributors and do not necessarily reflect the opinions of Ear Cult LLC. All editorial opinions are made solely by Ear Cult LLC. Two life sentences, one search for truth. This is Inconceivable, the story of Temujin Kinsu.